welcome to Theology Thursday, an ecumenical space for students to discuss matters of faith and theology.
I'm your host, Connor Grubbs.
I am your co-host, Ryan Mock.
And I'm your... Wait.
Go ahead.
Co-host, Johnny Grubbs. I forgot
who
wins.
What happened? you go last every time, Johnny.
You're like, who am I?
Now,
I was just reading a text. So
it's time for us to wish everyone...
Happy Thanksgiving!
Oh, that was... They probably just tuned out. So, this is our first Thanksgiving special. Because last year we were going strong in the middle of the Reformation month, and boom, we stopped and didn't come back till January. We're here with you for the holidays, and we're wishing you and yours a very, very happy Thanksgiving. Today we're going to be talking about Thanksgiving, kind of the... Some of the history, maybe some pieces of history you may not know, you may have not heard before, some really interesting pieces. It's gonna be fun, a little trip down memory lane for our country and kind of what this day means. And the Bible talks about us giving thanks as well, so we'll get into a little theology. This is a theology Thanksgiving, is what this is.
Ooh, the double
and,
T.
Yeah, the double T. Now, first, I do have a sub-point.
Ooh.
There is something we need to address.
Uh-oh.
And it is about a place that I frequent.
Chick-fil-A?
Yeah, I go there about twice a day.
Oh, yes.
I know
read
what
about
this is about.
Okay, so I don't know how much you read about it, but I'm about to learn you a thing or two.
Ooh.
Okay, so there's been some... So let's give some backstory here. There's been some controversy surrounding Chick-fil-A in the past for supporting, and I quote... anti-LGBTQ organization.
And this ticks me off for a lot of reasons.
Now, what they mean by this is Christian organizations.
Yeah.
These aren't like gay-hating, like bashing people over the head with Bible type
right. and
movements.
You're about to get into the details. So I don't want to step over your toes, but like just for an example here, Salvation Army is among them, and like I was reading an article today that was saying anti-LGBTQ organizations such as Salvation Army, and to reduce an organization such as the Salvation Army to an anti-LGBTQ organization after all the good that they've done.
Well, the Salvation Army part gets juicier. We're going to get to that.
Mm.
And another example, one they support is Fellowship of Christian Athletes. Those were the two major ones
right. That
people talked about. And you're right, to reduce either of those
right.
to simply that... is ridiculous.
But especially an organization that does things that could be considered humanitarian in nature
yeah.
that are universally acceptable by
humans. Even for people who are LGBT.
Right, exactly.
Like,
Salvation
Army's not going to turn down somebody who's like gay.
Yeah. And
they don't.
And FCA provides all sorts of resources and support for coaches and sports teams, like beyond just like preaching at them. They're also like providing in practical ways like in those fields. So anyway, it's... Chick-fil-A had been giving to them. They entered a 2-year contract, the Chick-fil-A Foundation, that is, to give to both of these organizations. Now, in the past, there's been protesting and all these different things, and then there was like a stand for Chick-fil-A Day. The Chick-fil-A didn't even start this, but like a bunch of like right-wing Republicans like showed up and like ate even more chicken on that day.
Nice.
And like it was like a huge business day for them. And so like it hasn't really affected them business-wise. They're still on their way up to being the largest fast food chain in America. I think they're number 3 right now. And they just keep growing and growing and growing. So it hasn't really affected them negatively.
Mm-mm.
What happened this weekend is if you look up Chick-fil-A in your Google or your whatever and look at the news... All the headlines are reading Chick-fil-A, you know, backs out of their, like, anti-LGBTQ whatever.
I'm like, that is not what is happening.
Right.
Their agreement ended.
and you know what's really bizarre is so many Christians or Republican leaders are going to Twitter to talk about Chick-fil-A's failed us. They've sold out. They've betrayed us. They're this. I mean, we're talking about prominent Christian and
which
Republican
is so
leaders.
Funny because they're always like, hey, be careful, that liberal media that always spins
right.
things. That's exactly what's happening here.
They're
taking two separate thoughts and pairing them together.
And if you read it, all of the official statements from Chick-fil-A employees, they explain very simply that they're no longer going to be doing 2-year commitments. They're going to reevaluate their giving on an annual basis, and that they are refocusing their giving to organizations that do homeless ministry, and they named a couple of things,
right,
where they're going to kind of refocus their giving to more specific needs, and that would include both Christian and non-Christian organizations.
And historically, they've given to other organizations besides FCA and right. Salvation Army. So it's not uncommon for Chick-fil-A to give for a certain amount of time to a particular group, and then to another, and then to another.
Right. Now, I think part of the reason the media reacted like this is because it wasn't just FCA and Salvation Army. Those were the prominent ones, but they backed out of a bunch of different ones and are just kind of reevaluating. But ministries reevaluate their giving. Churches reevaluate their giving all the time.
Right.
This isn't like an uncommon thing. And the fact is they're still giving to Christian organizations who affirm, you know, traditional marriage.
Right.
And they're still giving to non-Christian organizations just like they always have.
Well, it kind of reveals the problem from the beginning, which right. is that a lot of media outlets are saying just because you have a Christian or a traditional sexual ethic that you're anti-LGBTQ.
Yeah. No, it's yeah. a crazy story because they basically came out to talk about the fact that Chick-fil-A stopped doing something that they were never even doing in the first place.
Right, exactly.
I think what disappoints me is how easily some people like bought this. Now, here's what actually ticked me off today. Okay, at first I'm seeing like all these Christians and Republicans kind of like, oh, look, Chick-fil-A betrayed their values. I'm like, oh my goodness, like stop. Like that's not, it's so dumb that they're taking it that far. And I think, so there were two things that happened recently, and this is what I keep trying to mention. So there was a school that stopped accepting free Chick-fil-A, that the Chick-fil-A in their community was giving the teachers and all the staff and faculty free Chick-fil-A like once every week. And the school backed out. They were like, we don't want it anymore because it's anti-LGBT.
That's so dumb.
So, and I'm sure some of the teachers were a little upset about that. Yeah. They're like, I was getting free Chick-fil-A. Come on. And sure. then they started their first store overseas in the United Kingdom.
Yeah.
And the contract for where it was said, okay, well, we're going to finish out our contract, but after that, we don't want Chick-fil-A here anymore because we didn't realize at the time that they're anti-gay. but now we know. So their one store in the United Kingdom closed. So basically what you have is this has all happened in like the past month. They've faced some backlash and then they're giving changes. So the media took that as, oh, they're finally succumbing to our protesting. Right. Our message got across.
But that's all based in a false reality to begin with,
okay.
right?
Right. So, Salvation Army is not an overtly Christian organization. At this point, it's more of a humanitarian organization.
Right.
And I'm sure there are Christians that work in it, and there are a lot of Christian principles that have carried over into it to this day.
Right.
But sort of like something like YMCA or something like that, it's branched out beyond being more than just that.
Right.
But their statement, and I cannot fathom who wrote this statement or who they allowed it. It ticked me off so bad. It's like they just wanted attention. They saw that all the media outlets were pointed at this story, so they're like, I wonder how we can get some attention. Let's get some publicity. Ooh. And they came out and they said, we were really disappointed to hear that Chick-fil-A was retracting their giving. You had a 2-year deal. You knew they were about to stop.
Oh, no.
So they said, we were really... And then they said, We feel we can say with confidence that we have helped more LGBTQ+ individuals than any other humanitarian organization on the planet. So they basically said, we're so sad that Chick-fil-A is doing this. And by the way, we like gay people. And it's like, what on earth is happening? Like, nobody asked you to say anything.
Right.
Anyway, that's the end of my rant. That statement really ticked me off.
Yeah, that's dumb, and that doesn't help the narrative at all. They shouldn't be permeating something that's dumb. I mean, for them to come out and stand in solidarity with the LGBTQ community is still, I think that's an important statement.
Sure.
In the sense that, like especially the LGBTQ community, calling them anti-LGBTQ when numerous LGBTQ people have received food when they were about to starve, and all kinds of things like that, like...
Yeah.
They've served that community. So it's like...
Yeah. It's silly.
Everybody's being silly about this. Yeah.
I mean, people really... people really painted out to be... Here's where Chick-fil-A would be anti-gay that... In a way that even as a Christian, I would disagree with. If they refused to hire gay people to work the cashier counter. If they refused, like... If they started doing stuff like that, then that might actually be an issue. Like, yeah. we need to talk about that. Okay, you're not a church, you're a restaurant. So is it right for you to not let a gay person work your cashier? Like, does that really work? Probably not. Because, mm-hmm. you know, so there's conversations to have there. But that's not it. All it is that they're closed on Sundays and they give to Christian organizations.
It's still, the discussion constantly for me comes back to this. Is like, since when does having a different sexual ethic than somebody else equal bigotry? Because up until now, even saying sex outside of marriage, we don't think that's right. That's never been considered bigotry.
Right.
It's just you could even argue on the secular side, it's a moral preference. Okay? Yeah.
So, and there are more people doing that than there are gay people.
Right, exactly. And so I hang out with people like that all the time who don't share my sexual Christian ethic. They're not gay, but they don't share my sexual Christian ethic. What is the difference at this point? There is none.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, I guess, like, I don't know, for, like, gay people, like, maybe their sexual orientation has become their identity.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and that's really the fundamental problem. That's a bigger conversation.
Right, yeah. And
but that's illogical as well.
Right. Yeah. But there is, I mean, that's a great point, because there is a key difference, because I don't think anybody who's having sex outside of marriage is saying that premarital sex is their identity. You
I'm
pro-hetero,
like, man. Like, look at me go.
I mean, there's some people. But we know that they have issues. So anyway. That was my sub point. By the way, I love Chick-fil-A. I eat there twice a day. It's a problem. I have no money, and I'm really fat as a result of Chick-fil-A.
Well, you hate people then.
But I'm yeah. happy. I'm a happy man. So, oh, and that sweet tea. I wish I was drinking some right now. There's probably about 45% of these podcasts I had a sweet tea in my hand while we were recording.
That is true. I can't
listen
confirm.
To this bigot.
Okay. So now that we are can talk about now that we've talked about what state our country is in right now, let's talk about why we came here in the first place.
To build Chick-fil-A.
To build Chick-fil-A. So here's the bottom line. We know that Thanksgiving is this celebration of when the first settlers came to the New World, and as a child, right, I remember, like, reading, like, children's books about Thanksgiving, where there was, like, a bunch of fat pilgrims sitting around with their arms around their Indian buddies,
yes,
eating, like, fried turkey, and it's like, is that really what happened? I think it's really interesting, because the reason that they came in the first place was religious reasons.
Yes.
So there's a lot to talk about, because this isn't just history. This is church history.
Yeah.
So, and there's a lot that I've learned in the past few weeks about it that I found really fascinating. And so, Ryan, why don't you give us a little backstory? Well, why did they come? What happened?
Okay, so the pilgrims, as we call them today, they...
And they called themselves that. That's actually where that name came from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They had funny hats.
They did have funny hats, but that was not their identity, was to wear funny hats.
To eat turkey.
Yeah. They were Puritans. And so they actually came from England. But they didn't come straight to America from England. What happened was the Puritans in England were not... like in England, and England did not like the Puritans, because if we know church history, we know that the Anglican Church was the official state religion of England, and so nobody liked the Puritans, because the Puritans did not like the Anglican Church. They felt like the Anglican Church was not reformed enough for them, and so they didn't care to be in England. England was persecuting them, because they weren't Anglican. So they actually, they go to the Netherlands.
Yeah, they're in Holland
yes.
for most of that time, right?
Yep, they're in Holland, and everything actually goes out pretty well for the Puritans in Holland. As it turned out, the Netherlands were actually a pretty progressive state back then. They're much more religious tolerant. They were much more tolerant of other religions and different denominations. So the Puritans were actually able to worship freely in the Netherlands. So a lot of people have the misconception that the pilgrims came to America because they were running away from religious persecution in England and the Netherlands. But that's not really the case, because they didn't face any persecution in the Netherlands. They were allowed to freely worship. But there was a few problems with the Puritans in the Netherlands. The first problem was that they weren't really making enough money. So life was kind of rough for them in that respect. They kind of had crappy jobs. They weren't digging that too much. And it was kind of expensive to live there. So they're having money problems. And then the second reason was that, I guess, I find this kind of funny. The Netherlands were too progressive for them. They were allowed to freely worship, but that also meant that everybody else was allowed to freely worship whatever they wanted. Everybody else was kind of like, you know, you can do whatever you want.
People's heads are exploding right now because you're telling them they've heard, especially in like modern Christendom, that yeah. like they were fleeing for more religious freedom, but really they felt they had too much.
Yeah. Everybody was like, you know, you can do whatever you want. And right. the Puritans are like, this nation is wicked.
We need to build a Christian school.
So they're like, we can't go to England because the English don't like us because we're not Anglican. And we can't stay in the Netherlands because we're not making enough money, and this place is just too progressive for us.
Yeah.
And so they're like, well, why don't we just go to America? And that's literally what they did. They went to America, and they set up their own colony.
And they were offered the chance to do this. So the king
yeah.
offered them finances yeah, because did. It would benefit the motherland.
Yes. And so so they did get like a charter from England to go to set up this colony in North America, which they did. They didn't land exactly where they wanted to. They're about 200 miles off course just because of weather problems.
Well,
and their journey was very fun, too.
Yeah, so there's one thing just about their time in Holland that I want to point out. You know, there's actually a third reason that really was a motivating factor for them in coming to the New World, and it was surprisingly and ironically, as you watch the rest of the story unfold, but a big part of their original motivation for coming to the New World was actually to get the gospel to the native Indians. If you read a lot of the sermons and the speeches that they were getting in that time in Holland before they left, they had a very missional tone.
Yes.
They wanted to bring the light of the gospel of Jesus Christ to the Indians. And it was kind of, you know, there's even discussion about how, well, we don't have room for them here, so we got to go to them, and they'd be shocked by the population in America now. You know, but so it's really interesting because I don't think I ever thought about that when I learned it, you know, in the history books and a kid. It was actually for them, it was kind of like they were going as missionaries, and that was something that they would come back to whenever things got hard.
Yeah, the thing to understand about the Puritans is they're very religious minded. They weren't like other colonists who were motivated by money, although they did care about making money. That wasn't their motivation. Their motivation was their top motivation was their religion. I recommend reading Puritan writings. William Bradford was the guy who led the Pilgrims, and he wrote like a biography, or that he wrote a history of their journey. I think it's called Of Something. I don't know. Yeah. I can't remember the name.
Pilgrim
of the Pilgrim Ways. But he wrote basically the history of how they got to America and their time in their little colony. But if you just read William Bradford, you know, wrote, he's very religious minded, yeah. and everything was from God.
Yeah.
I recall there's a specific story in his writings where he talks about when they're on the Mayflower, one of the sailors who was a Dutchman, he did not like the Pilgrims, and so this particular sailor made jokes about how he wanted to throw all the Pilgrims overboard by the end of the journey.
He called them Bible thumping puke sacks.
Right. So he didn't particularly care for them, and so this the sailor gets sick and dies,
He was the only one to die on the trip.
He was the only one to die on the trip. And so they throw him overboard. And so William Bradford writes about this, like, as noting this, the irony in the situation that he wished death upon the pilgrims, yet he was the one cast into the sea.
Yeah. One of the reasons he hated them so much is because most of them had never done extensive sea travel before, so they were literally puking all the time. And that's part of why Puke Sack was the nickname he got. So, I mean... But it was bad, too, because they talk about storms where the boat would lean so far over that the mast would dip into the water, and then it would go back the other way and dip into the other side and just keep going back and forth. Like, that's how rough their travels were, and they had nowhere to go. So, I mean, the boat was full of, like, feces and puke.
And no Dramamine, either.
Yeah.
Definitely, you know... you know, the Atlantic Ocean is crazy. And so, I mean, if you look at, like, videos today of, like, you have people, like, big cargo ships, like, sailing on the Atlantic Ocean and, like, big crazy waves. Just imagine what it was like, you know, that time ago.
Also, originally, it was supposed to be two boats, but the second boat sprung a leak, like, immediately upon them supposed to be leaving.
Right.
So then they ended up cramming everybody onto one boat. I mean, so you think about it. I mean, they had lots going against them.
Yes.
And while Little Dutch Boy was the only one that died... most of them were sick by the time they arrived.
Right, and they started to die upon arrival.
But why are we laughing?
They did. I don't know. They did make it over the sea, but like those salt and pepper shakers, I think it's just.
Oh yeah, yeah. I always think about that. So we have those fat salt and pepper shakers from.
They
Publix.
Were starving.
I have the same thing.
They were starving people.
Yeah.
Again, we're laughing to cope with that reality, but...
Well, I mean, the difference between what we, like, kind of portray it as in our paintings and the decorations and the little children's books and what actually happened is just so vast. You know, one of the things that we see that actually did happen was upon their arrival, they did actually befriend... some of the Indians.
Right, they didn't just come in like... You know, like
guns blazing.
Guns blazing. Like
this
some
is
people
our home
think,
now.
You
know, that happened later.
I mean, like, we think of, like, the Spanish conquistadors, they did kind of come in guns blazing. And so people have this misconception that all Europeans hated all Native Americans, just wanted all Native Americans dead or in slavery. That's not entirely the case.
The original group that came really wanted to share the gospel with the Native Indians. And you see this love for the people before they even arrive to the land that's really evident. And that's not to say that colonists who came later on and as things grew, that problems didn't happen. Because the way that the Native Americans were treated... was horrible.
Right.
Some really, really terrible things happened by people who claim to be religious, in the same way that slavery and all these other things throughout our history were motivated supposedly by religious reasons. And so it's kind of interesting to watch that throughout our history. But the original settlers, it's actually kind of a funny story how they met Squanto. He had been to Europe before. And for Europeans, it was just a thing that they all drank beer. And it wasn't because they were all getting drunk all the time. It was because they were afraid of water. Many of them had died because of drinking bad water. Yeah. So even the children would drink small amounts of beer.
Nice.
That's what they all drank. And so...
Don't get any Thanksgiving ideas.
So the Indians' time in Europe, Squanto had some beer. And so the first conversation he has with the pilgrims when they get there, he sees them kind of like getting ready and he notices their European clothing. And he can speak some English too. And the very first thing he asks them is, do you have some beer? So that was the first conversation. So really things started rather peaceably.
And thus a beautiful friendship was born.
Yeah, well, and he began to teach them how to work the land, how to hunt, how to fish.
I guess they're kind of yuppies, you know, they didn't really know much about how to till the land.
You guys don't know anything.
there's nothing that indicates that there was actually turkey at the first one. There would have been like pies and different things like that. But it was actually mostly a seafood feast.
And corn. They did have corn.
They did have corn. In fact, there's a tradition. There was a long period of time where they were starving and they only had 5 kernels of corn per person. And so even at their first feast, they started with a plate with just 5 pieces of corn, and then they would pray and give thanks.
So Thanksgiving challenge today. If you haven't already eaten, go ahead. Just five kernels. Five kernels.
That became a tradition that they would have. They would still have the giant feast, but they would start with only five kernels of corn on their plate to remember what they had gone through. So that was like a tradition going forward. Yeah, some.
If we can still eat, then
still had a huge feast. Believe me, they ate plenty. to celebrate what had happened. So, I just think it's kind of interesting to think about how it really was their faith that motivated them and brought them through. You read the Mayflower Compact, and it's beautiful. I mean, there's a lot to learn.
And then we threw all that out the window.
Yeah, and
generations
then,
later.
And then things got weird.
Would be proud.
Yeah, I don't think they would.
They wouldn't.
So it can become dangerous because we've seen throughout history Christians supposedly Christians using the Bible to justify some really horrible atrocities.
Right.
And that's something that I don't think should be forgotten, because I think sometimes people go so far one way where they're like, Thanksgiving's horrible, we shouldn't celebrate it, the pilgrims were evil people, but like we just said, no, they actually did come in peace. They didn't come guns blazing. And then other people go so far the other way where they're like, all of our forefathers, founding fathers, were great, amazing people, and they did nothing wrong.
Right.
And the truth is kind of somewhere in the middle.
Right. Well, and I think there's a great insight here, because I think a lot of people, especially today, as we're, at least in America, as we're becoming increasingly post-Christian, there's this idea where people lump people of faith into this category of racism, and that there's a lot of socioeconomic and political factors that go into that association. But what's interesting about this story is it proves that it's not our proximity to faith, that our close proximity to faith, that makes us racist or any of those things. It's actually the opposite. While they were truly faithful and actually had a relationship with Christ, there was this feeling of well-being. That's not it. There was a feeling of goodwill. That's what I'm looking for. A feeling of goodwill towards people that were different than them. But then as people got more focused on economics or just religiosity that had nothing to do with real, true faith, that's when racism and all those kind of things became more prevalent.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's where I think, and we've talked about this previously during 4th of July last year, we talked about it's nationalism a sin. And I think just recognizing that America's not a Christian nation. There's no such thing as a Christian nation.
That's what the Bible says. The nations rage against all that is the kingdom. There's only one nation.
Except America. America's the only nation. No,
there's only one nation that we serve, and that is the kingdom. That's the holy city.
There are so many people that that their nation becomes an idol, and it's like, oh, well, America's not God's chosen nation. Israel is. And even that, the doors have been opened up.
It points to, you know, a greater kingdom, you know, that Gentiles are incorporated
into.
Right,
exactly. Yeah. Through Israel, the nations of the earth are blessed. So.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is like recognizing that, you know, everybody's grafted into that, even the immigrants. And I don't want to get too political, but like
the immigrants, why?
My point is this, and this is kind of what I'm preaching on Sunday morning, and this is why I bring it up, is that every human being has dignity and value in the eyes of God, and we can say that all day long, but do we really live like it? Like essentially the passage I'm going to be talking about, and I'm only going to briefly touch on immigrants because I don't really want to talk about immigration politics, but like, how about homelessness? Like, we see a lot of that in Pinellas County. And what Paul challenges the church in Thessalonica to do at the very end of his letter is to essentially to treat a homeless person with the same amount of dignity and respect that you would treat your pastor. Does that homeless person have the same spiritual authority? No. But do they carry the same value? Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so that's just something that we need to remember. Sometimes we get so caught up in America. And at the end of the day, it's about the kingdom of Jesus. And nothing else. I mean, it's,
and ironically enough, those first settlers were about that, not about creating what we have today.
Am I grateful for our country? Yeah, of course I am. But to be there, I've just met a lot of Christians who try and ignore some of the obvious issues.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And just try to simplify it to, oh, it's the Democrats and the liberals. And it's like, it's not that simple.
But wait, Connor, are you saying Thanksgiving isn't about the founding of our nation, but it's rather about loving other people?
I'm saying for the Christian, it probably should be. you know, it's good to remember what those first settlers did.
Right.
I mean, and history is important, bottom line. But I think there's a greater theme here that we need to let take root in our hearts, because the Psalms talk about Thanksgiving all the time before Thanksgiving was a holiday.
Right. Yeah.
Actual
act of Thanksgiving.
You know, and there were Thanksgiving offerings that the Israelites had. There were different types of offerings, and that was one of them. Literally, I mean, there was worship and there was praise, but there was also just giving thanks, you know, to God for who he is and what he's done.
Well, and historically, that's all. I mean, it is true. I mean, the reality of the Pilgrims landing at Plymouth is not about the founding of America. It's not. The Mayflower Compact, if you read all the text within it, it was actually just like a means of getting by because they didn't have a government.
Well, and
they couldn't figure it out.
Right? Also, here's the other cool thing to notice about the Mayflower Compact. I forgot to mention this earlier. That was nothing new. Mm-hmm. That was everything they had been vision casting in Holland leading up to their trip. They had already talked about all that. Mm-hmm. It was just a reminder. After all they had sacrificed and the people who had passed away, they just got up and a reminder, just like, I mean, the Israelites need reminders all the time. We need reminders all the time. The Mayflower Compact was a reminder of what they had already talked about.
Right, yeah.
Of their purpose, you know?
Right. So really, I mean, all of that, the feast, the surviving, and the reason that they came was rooted in their faith, but not the way we think, like they were founding a Christian nation, but that they were just caring for their neighbors.
Yeah.
And their neighbors were, and that's another huge insight, that their neighbors were caring for them. It's not like, oh, we're all high and mighty in the church, reaching out to all of those people, but we actually have a lot to learn from people that are different than us.
Yeah. They learned from, you know, they learned from each other. They gave thanks to God together. Yeah. And they celebrated together.
That sounds like the church.
Yeah, kind of does. So I think there's some good insights there. You know, you learn some things. And I definitely think it's important to learn history, to learn it from multiple perspectives and kind of get down to the bottom, to the nitty-gritty. So this is it for a little bit. We're going to have two episodes in December. One's going to be like a church history kind of episode. We're going to talk about the origin of Christmas.
Yay. The pagan holiday.
Yeah, we're going to talk about worship Satan. How everyone's a pagan. No, I'm just kidding.
And we're going to talk about, we're going to start the new section on Jesus. This is a perfect time to do it because some of the first things we're going to talk about are the incarnation and the virgin birth. Which kind of have to do with Christmas, so
Christmas.
Two little episodes, but those will be coming a little later in a few weeks, and then also probably the greatest Theology Thursday content to ever be released. Johnny shared in the episode where we shared our testimonies about how he began to ask our mother questions about God after watching a cartoon called Annabelle's Wish.
Yeah.
About a cow.
The connection is so far that you will, if you're not a believer, you will believe afterwards.
Yeah.
Because you'll be like, oh, so, okay, if that can lead somebody to faith that God is working in the world. Yeah.
The three of us are going to watch Annabelle's Wish together, and we're going to release this video for you to join us for a viewing of Annabelle's Wish.
As we watch, there's really only one scene that deals with the afterlife, and it only kind of does, and I'll show you, I'll point out the scene that made me question things about heaven and hell.
Does the cow go to heaven? Is that what happens?
That's what's implied.
We're gonna do a deep dive analysis. I don't want any spoilers. It's been a while since I've seen this.
I've never seen this. This will be my first time viewing this.
Oh, it's gonna be fun, man.
Yeah.
This is even if it's not fun for our viewers, I mean, I think we're gonna have a fun time.
Yeah.
Or listeners, rather.
Okay. Well, happy Thanksgiving to you all, and thank you for joining us.
As always, thank you for listening to Theology Thursday. You can find old episodes on iTunes, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, the Google Play Store, YouTube, and Podbean. You can send questions that you want us to answer on the show to theologythursdaypodcast@gmail.com, and you can also find us on Instagram and Facebook. We hope to have you back next Thursday.